how you made that transition from a singer into a CIO, because I think that's such an inspiring story.
Early 90s, South Bank, I'm at this little company and I'm on reception, and I remember answering the phone and I said, Apple Computers, Mary Beth speaking, how may I help you? And I'll say this now to everyone listening, don't be afraid to pivot, be afraid not to. I use the analogy, a coach helps you win the game, a mentor helps you win the season, but the sponsor gets you seen and heard and gets you that seat. I want everyone that listens to this, that reads my books, that I just want everyone to have the most amazing career, because you're going to do it for the next 40 years, right? So you want it to be really amazing. You want to sit back and reflect and go, wow, what a ride.
Mary Beth, welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast. Fantastic to have you on the show today. Really excited to get stuck into this episode. But before we do, can you just give the audience a little bit of an introduction into who you are, your background, and what brought you here today? Over to you.
Well, my background is a little bit varied and diverse. And the reason for having a chat with you today, Georgie, is because I love what you're doing in the Sisterhood Club. Any opportunity that I have to demonstrate to young upcoming female leaders in the STEM space or wherever they're at, that they can, you know, that they can see that it is entirely possible to get to the C-suite and be reasonably young, and when you're doing it, I think that's really important. And I am a firm believer in you can't be what you can't see. So I like to do these sorts of things, and this is one of the reasons why I do a lot of these podcasts, and I like to talk about leadership. My journey has been, you know, different to other people's journeys. I started out in my career as a professional singer, and there came a point where I realized I wasn't achieving what I wanted in that space, and I wanted something else, but I didn't know what that something else was. So part of me needed to go back to those things that are important to me. And I talk a lot about this with people that I mentor. It's about bringing joy into the workplace. For me, I need to be doing something that brings me joy and is joyous. And that's how I've focused my career. And when I was young and decided to give up professional singing, I knew I wanted to work in the corporate sector. I just didn't know what that was. So I needed to do a lot of soul searching and working out what that is, a lot of planning. And now I've achieved what it was that I set out to achieve. And now for me, it's about using that achievement as a platform to help others. So thank you for having me.
Yeah. And this is part of the reason why I wanted you on the podcast, because you are a walking, talking example of what Pam and I, who isn't unfortunately here today, but what we talk about all the time about when we say about women coming into technology and women coming into STEM, there's this thought process that you have to come from a technical background, and you are an example that is simply not true. So could you give a little bit of a career overview of how you made that transition from a singer into a CIO, because I think that's such an inspiring story. And I can imagine people listening to this right now will go, like, what are the steps? What should I do? How do I get started in making that transition? So how did that look for you?
It all came down to planning and then executing on a plan. And for those project managers that are listening to this, or those individuals sit back going, well, that sounds really simple. It is simple. It is understanding where you want to go to and then putting in those steps to get you there. And the big key is really about sponsorship. I can't express that enough. And understanding what the difference between a mentor and a sponsor is and what a coach is. So I use the analogy, a coach helps you win the game, a mentor helps you win the season, but the sponsor gets you seen and heard and gets you that seat, whatever role it is. And so for me, it was about that sponsorship. And starting out as a singer, And then trying to move into that, into the corporate space was very challenging. It was, I think it was about 30 interviews that I went for. I decided because I didn't know, I knew I wanted to work in the corporate space. I had a little bit of skill, but I didn't understand the difference between a course and transferable skills, work-related skills. I didn't understand that when I was first starting out. And I went for multiple interviews and I decided temping, if you remember what temping is, these days it's a lot of short-term contracts. Temping is even shorter than that. It's a day here or a week there, and it's working in multiple different organizations. And I kept going for all these interviews and not getting any airspace. I had a lot of people wanting to understand, oh, you're a singer, tell us about that. But they weren't really interested in me and what I could offer, until I met a woman who'd seen me perform, and she said she found it really fascinating, and she asked me, what does it take to do a performance? And I talked her through the entire process, which is really project management and logistics. At the end of the day, it's dealing with agents, it's dealing with customers, it's understanding the difference between one gig and getting paid $2,000 for that gig versus three gigs that pay you $1,500. It's better to do the three gigs at 1500, obviously, because you're making more money and there's less calls that you have to make. It's about organizing the equipment that you need for the venue that you need, understanding the size of the venue. And it goes on and on and on. What I didn't realize was that all of that was transferable. Mm. And what this woman took me through was, well, this is all transferable skills and this is really good stuff. And she said to me, you stood up on stage. She was at a wedding that I was performing at, and I sang 7 hours worth of material, so seven sets. And she said it was extraordinary, the amount of energy that was required to keep the audience engaged, et cetera, et cetera, dealing with people at different levels of inebriation through the evening, which she said was excellent stakeholder management. And I'm like thinking, I have no idea what she's talking about, but it all sounds fabulous to me. And then she said, I'm going to give you a go. I'm going to put you into an organization. We're going to start out small. We're going to pop you in on reception somewhere. And then it just happened. I started going into different organizations. And the tipping point for me was working at a little company. This is in the early 90s. I'm showing my age now, Georgie. But it was the early 90s. Well, early 90s. South Bank, I'm at this little company and I'm on reception, and I remember answering the phone and I said, Apple Computers, Mary Beth speaking, how may I help you? And the managing director of that particular business came out and he said, no, it's Apple Computer, no S. And it was at that point that I saw, you know, they had the Macs, the brand new Macs back then, the Newton, all those sorts of things in this showroom. And I got home to my then boyfriend, who became my husband, and I said, oh, what's that? It's a really interesting company. And I'm there for a week, and it's called Apple Computer. And his jaw dropped, and he was so excited. And that was the very first inkling that I wanted to get into technology, because I actually get really bored. And the one thing about technology is that it's new. It's always new. It's always shifting. It's always changing. Mm-hmm. You can learn something new. But what I also realized is that I had been leading bands for a very long time, and I really enjoyed that leadership piece, and I wanted to get into that space. So I started temping, and then eventually I got my first full-time role out of a temping job, and that was the technical services in a transport logistics company working in the EFTPOS and EFT, in the automatic teller machine space, which was all new technology back then. And so that's where it all started. So, but that sponsorship, it would never have happened without that. It would never have happened without feedback, with all of those things, and planning and really thinking and trying things. And that's how that worked for me. So when individuals that come to see me and they're in that space of, it's time, I need a change, They know that it's the name of the book for the new book for me. When now means now, you know it. Everyone has been through that. It's that it's now. I just am not sure what the next steps are. I work people through that. For me, it's what brings you joy, what's transferable. And then we do a bit of a role and goal analysis, and we have a look at, you know, those companies you want to work for, or the sort of culture you want to work within. You might not know the company or the industry, but you know the culture that you're looking for. And how do you ask those questions? How do you glean that and understand that when you're interviewing?
There's such an amazing story, and I think it just illustrates so many important points there. Number one, you first had to believe in yourself enough to take that step, to go to those 30 interviews, to show up, right? That in itself is the first step. You took responsibility. You identified, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to change. And you took the right actions. The next thing is you met somebody that just gave you that belief that when I'm going to take a shot on you. And that is just, we all have those moments in our lives where one person can completely change the direction. And I think once you've experienced that, it makes you so much more passionate about becoming a coach or becoming a mentor, because you know that that can really have such a pivotal moment on your life, which is really super powerful. And the second piece is just that whole transferable skills, because in so many people's world, they look at themselves and they go, well, I'm never going to be able to break into that industry or work for that company. What have I got to offer? And we come up against it all the time, especially unfortunately with women, because I do find that there is this sort of lack of courage, this lack of confidence, which is really sad. And when you were saying your story there, Mary Beth, I was reflecting on my own journey where I went from beauty into technology, again, completely separate industries, but just having the, I guess, the self-belief or just the courage to pick up the phone and call up that HR manager and say, look, I've got no experience in what you're looking for, but this is what I do have. And I'd love to come in for an interview and meet with you. Now that takes courage. That takes some self-belief. And what I'm really, really passionate about and what I really want to speak to you about today is you are somebody who has taken responsibility for your career. You are somebody who has had a plan. And how important is that? Because I was reading on one of your blogs where you were saying that, you know, when you speak to people, they haven't ever thought about their career path. They haven't ever thought about where they want to go. So if someone's listening to this right now and they're thinking, I know it's time to make a change. I'm not happy where I am, but I do not know where to begin. I haven't thought about my career. What's your advice on where they could begin?
So a couple of things there to unpack. One thing, yes, it does take courage and that self-belief. You have to remember that I was a singer, which meant auditions after auditions. There's a great chapter in the book, you know, the ruthlessness of cattle calls, because you'd literally go into an audition with hundreds of people and you wouldn't even, sometimes you'd walk in with your sheet music, your headshot, and you wouldn't even get to open your mouth because you just didn't have the look. You weren't what they were looking for. And you build resilience from that. And it's from that. And I'm still like that. I will, you know, for the next, whatever the next role is for me, it's going to be attempt after attempt until you find the people that you're what they're looking for and they're what you're looking for. Really important just to understand you are interviewing them as much as they are interviewing you. Where do you start? The first place is that recognition, the acknowledgement. It's now. The time is now. And I do say this to the people that I mentor. Do not allow your career just to happen to you. Take control of it. And by control, it is understanding those companies that you want to work for. The sort of culture, I said that before, that you want to work within. Is it a large enterprise you want to work with? A smaller company? Is it a startup? A scale-up? What is that? What does that look like? What are the industries that you will not work at? Because as far as I'm concerned, if you know the industries you're not interested in, then everything else should be available to you. And then start really noting down your transferable skills. Your resume is one thing. Your resume is going to get you that look in the door. But it's about how you weave a story around your transferable skills and the skills that you do have. And one thing I will say for the women that are listening to this, you're going to look at job descriptions and you're going to say, "Ooh, I've only got 6 or 7 of the 10 of the attributes that they're saying that they want. I'm not going to apply for that." I say to you this, if you've got 4 of those things, apply, because you're going to have transferable skills that will possibly meet some of the needs of the things you think you may not have. So you still apply. And I also then say to the people that I mentor, it is about choice. Because when now means now is about creating choice. So when you get your resume up to date, which is generally that second step, first step is the acknowledgement, yes, this is time. The next step is, well, okay, is my resume up to scratch? Does that look okay? Does it match my LinkedIn profile? Do I have a LinkedIn profile? These days, if you don't have a LinkedIn profile and you're not curating it, you might want to start thinking about that, because employers are looking at your LinkedIn profile. 100%. So that's an important piece. That's part of your that virtual branding, your external branding. But understanding the companies you wish to apply for and then applying for those companies. See if you can get an interview. If you can get an interview with your resume, then it shows that it's strong enough for you to get an interview. If you're not getting interviews, it just means you need to do a bit of work. Every time you get a rejection or you don't hear something is a lesson, is something you can learn. So those are the things that are really important. And just remember, it's a numbers game. The more you do it, the more honed you are. I say to the people that are employed by me, that work in my teams, my expectation is that they will go for an interview once every 3 months. They all think it's nuts, and I know the HR department thinks I'm nuts, but I want to create a culture where it's safe for you to do that and that you keep your skills up, because you don't know when something is going to change the workplace, where you might be ready for something else and the workplace you're at isn't offering you. But what you want to make sure is that you are skilled and ready at any point to go for an interview. So that's where I usually start. It's time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's quite a scary moment, isn't it? When you realize that, God, I'm not happy, I'm not fulfilled. And then what do you do at that point? Do you stay? Do you go? But I think that's when you've really got to look within and ask yourself some really deep questions. And I actually read a quote the other day. It said, discipline weighs ounces, regret weighs tons. And this is always what drives me in whenever I'm making a big decision of, if I don't go for this now, if I don't make change, am I going to live with regret? And honestly, that is probably one of the most scariest things that I really, like, when I'm sitting down to make a decision, I go, will I regret this? And if the answer is yes, I know it's time. Because I think when we fast forward our lives and we go 10 years from now, if I'm still exactly where I am today, is that a scary thought? And if the answer is yes, I think you know it's time to do something about it. That's sort of how I sort of like to think about it as well. But you've touched upon some really important things there, Mary Beth. And one of them is something that I'm very passionate about as well, about your LinkedIn profile, about your external brand. I don't think people understand how important it is these days to have some kind of external online presence, whether you are the CEO, the CIO, the admin woman or guy. Like, everybody has an online presence, because like you said, the first thing that a HR director does or a recruiter does or a hiring manager does is check you out online. It's the first thing they do. So again, you've got an amazing online presence. You really do. You've got a fantastic newsletter, which I was reading before we jumped on. You do some phenomenal posts, very educational, lots of value being offered into the marketplace. How important do you think having a personal brand or an online presence is these days? And I'm curious as well, what kind of doors and opportunities have you seen it open for you in your career?
Your online brand will give you choice. When you feel that the time is right for you, the worst place to be, especially if you're feeling that I can't do this job anymore, it's time for a change, the worst thing to feel is trapped. And you feel trapped when you don't have choice. So choice, and this is why you do these things, but you do them slowly and you create a plan. Everything's a plan, right? So you execute on a plan for your brand. How important is an online presence? An online presence from a professional perspective, very important. It's more important these days because it's become that mechanism that people will look at you and see what you're made of. If you look at my profile, and anybody that listens to this, please have a look. You get my brand as soon as you look at it, but understand that I have been building that for the last 4 years. And it just takes time and understanding what it is that you want. I knew I always wanted to be a leader. I wanted to lead people. I wanted to be a management contributor to an organization. Those are the things that are important to me. But I'm also a little bit quirky. So the latest post is a little quirky because I'm a bit geeky, and that's okay. But it is not too much of that. It's all curated so that it really does show that, yeah, I'm a person like everybody else. I have fun, quirky things that I like to enjoy. But at the end of the day, my network and my team is the most important thing for me. And it's a garden that I like to nurture. Gone are the days where working somewhere for 15, 20 years is what you do. We just don't do that anymore. In fact, when I finished working at a major transportation company and moved across to an allied health organization, at the interview, I'd been at the transportation organization for 15 years, moved around a lot and learned a lot. And I'm so grateful for the learnings that I got there. But I was asked, are you institutionalized? I thought, that's really interesting. Now it's shifted so much so that everything's about your online presence. Everything is about the impact that you make in that online presence. So really important to make sure that when you do have an online presence, certainly from a professional perspective, you understand your brand. And if you don't understand your brand, then work with someone, work with a coach or a mentor, or whatever you want to work with, but start to build out what your brand is so that you know what that is. And then you can weave that into your internal organization as well. And don't be afraid of it. I know a lot of people who are afraid to do a post on LinkedIn because they're afraid of what someone might say. Mm-hmm. I've never really had anyone say anything aggressive or rude to anything that I've posted on LinkedIn, but I also think about what I'm posting. So when I write a post, I think about what's the value I want to create with this post? What is it that I want people to take away from it? And the last post, the post on Sunday, was just that it's okay to embrace your inner geek or your inner child. And that's okay. But in a lot of the other posts, it's really about how can I help an individual see things through a different lens? Mm-hmm. So really important.
That's so powerful. Yeah, 100%. Correct. And you're so right. I think that's the really important question to ask is, what value can I offer to the marketplace? And if you always come from that, I don't think you can go too wrong. But also, again, from someone who posts quite a lot on LinkedIn as well, I always have the thought process, well, if you're not in the arena, then, you know, if you want to come up into my profile, into my world and make some sort of like snide comment, again, what value are you offering to the marketplace? And it always does make me smile. It doesn't happen often, thankfully, but when it does, I always go, what value did that offer apart from, you know, just to leave a negative comment? And you know what, as well, I always think to myself, I just come from a place of go, I really hope you're okay, because to come on and to leave some sort of negative comment on someone else's post, you must be having a really, really bad day. And I always try and come from a place of honestly empathy and think, I really hope that person's okay, because there has never been a time in my life ever have I gone onto someone's profile and left a negative or just a comment with offering no value. I might not agree with that person. So I might say, oh, I think that's a really interesting post. Have you thought about it from this point of view? But I'm always, again, trying to offer value. I'm never just going to go on and just go, I don't agree with this, you know, and just have that negative energy and vibe. But I think that's honestly what puts a lot of people off posting, is because they are worried about what other people think of them. And to that, I would say, well, at the end of the day, you know, don't let that stop you, because it's not about them. It's about the people that you can offer value to. And every single person has got something of value to offer the world. We've we're all unique. We've all got our own gifts. And your post or your blog might just be that thing that really helps that person on that day. And that's all I like to think when I post. And I'm sure you're exactly the same, Mary Beth. But you are very big on leadership. And I can see how your leadership style would be so innovative and really forward thinking. And I can imagine like people in your team really look up to you and look for guidance. So in your view and your experience from leading, you know, multiple projects and multiple big teams, what do you think the key to leadership is, and what lessons have you learned from leading teams, and what sort of advice can you give to those that maybe are in a leadership position right now?
I was lucky enough to be awarded one of the CIO 50 awards for innovative leadership last year with CIO 50.
And just hang on a second. That is incredible. Congratulations, by the way. I was actually meant to say that to you before we jumped on. Incredible. Congrats.
I was with, there were 50 winners, and I was so proud to have been included in that group of just mm-hmm. amazing technologists. It was wonderful. And I was on a panel as part of it. And the reason I was asked to be on the panel is because I put in my response to one of the questions, which was exactly the same question you're asking, what are the leadership lessons that you've learned? So to answer the first question, for me, it is about empowerment. If you are not empowering your team and allowing them to learn, fail, you know, trip, if you're not allowing them to do that, then you're not leading them. You're micromanaging them, and that's not what it's about. It's about empowerment for me. And being an authentic leader, that's very important. And I also believe that everyone is a leader to some extent. No matter what rung you are in an organization, we're all leaders to some extent. Sometimes we have to follow, and as a leader, I also have to follow some, you know, do those sorts of things. But what I learned, I was a terrible leader when I first started. I was used to leading a band, and it's different. In a band, everyone knows what they need to do, but you are the lead singer, so therefore you cue them, you do everything. They're looking to you for the cues because that's what you need to do. Well, so I thought, that's how I read it. In fact, it was probably, you know, it was probably the rhythm section that owned it all, but I had no, anyway, I had tickets on myself when I was that young. What I hadn't learned was empowering people, letting them do their job. So I was in role, first full-time role, and my team was underperforming. I knew they were underperforming, and I was working really hard. And I remember putting in really big days, and the team was underperforming, and I kept taking things away from them. Because it was like, well, I might as well just do this all myself. I might as well just do it myself because none of you are performing to the level that's expected. I never told them what was expected, mind you. So let's you know, so I was working really hard. They had no idea what they weren't doing that I expected. They didn't know what my expectations were. And my very first boss, who is still one of my closest friends today, and I will ring her even, you know, at least once a month. We'll catch up for dinner. My very first boss, she said, you need to empower people. You need to give them enough rope so that they can swing from the trees. And, you know, and when they falter, when that rope gets caught around their throats and they're starting to gasp, you need to step up, lift them up, take the rope off the next, and then you give it back to them and let them soar. She said, otherwise they're never going to learn. And you learn the most when you make mistakes. And I said, but that will make me look bad. I will be a bad leader. She said, well, you're not leading at the moment. You're micromanaging these people to within an inch of their lives, and they're never going to learn anything from you, and you're never going to learn anything from them. And I said, what do you mean learn from them? And that was it. That was the crux of leadership for me. Learn from them. They learn from you. It's symbiotic, which is why I love mentoring. Because I learn from my mentees and they learn from me. And, you know, it may be that, you know, I had one mentee who just knew Pinterest and I've never used Pinterest and she took me through it. And I learned that. And it's like, oh, awesome. So it might seem like the silliest thing, but that leadership journey when I first embarked on it, I was woeful, less than woeful. And now I let people do, I hire really smart people and I let them do what they do because that's what I get the most out of. So why hire these really smart people if you don't let them do their jobs? Simple as that. And I think Steve Jobs said it. He said it more eloquently than I have, but yeah.
That story it just illustrates leadership at its best. And I think I've never heard it in that sort of way before, but it makes so much sense in my mind. And what you just said then, Mary Beth, I can also relate to, because that used to be my leadership style, is that if I want a job done, I've got to do it myself. I'll take that. And then you just end up just completely overwhelmed and maximized, disempowering your team. And they're just like, well, what am I actually doing here? And then they don't learn. And then you end up having to do more work. And it's just a vicious cycle. But I had to learn to let go of my ego a bit, actually, and listen. Yeah. And understand, like, I was so busy talking that I didn't listen enough. And it's something that, look, I'm still on a leadership journey myself. I certainly have got still a long way to go. But that was the first thing. I was, I'm not listening enough. And what you said then about the expectations, they had no idea what the expectations were. So how on earth could I have ever expected the team to do what I wanted them to do? Because they didn't have a clue what that was. You know, people do need sometimes a little bit of direction. And I think ultimately people are set up for fail when they join businesses because they've got no idea really what the expectation is, what the outcomes are. And it's so important to all be working towards an outcome and a goal as a team. And I think that's how, when I really reflect on my leaders, the best ones have been those that have just let me make a few mistakes, learn from those mistakes, supporting me through the mistakes, and then empowered me to keep going and certainly not beat myself up for making those mistakes as well. But God, it's such a learning opportunity, isn't it, leadership? And I think that there's unfortunately not enough women in leadership roles. I'd love to sort of go into now something I am very passionate about. I'd love to see more women in C-suite roles. I'd love to see more women stepping up and taking on CIO roles and CEO roles. So how have you taken real control of that? And why are you where you are now? Like, do you think that there are some traits, some characters that you've developed? Have you invested in learning and growth over the years? Like, How have you been able to get to where you are today, which is really, like, in technology, the highest position that you could get, a CIO, really? It's incredible. So what do you think has enabled you to do that?
I studied and learned and I worked. If we ever have a really full on conversation about my background, I did a lot of lateral moves because I was so constrained in the organizations that I worked within. And I have to say, very, very male dominated. And so trying to move up, it was very challenging. So I moved laterally and learned a lot laterally, which gave me that breadth of knowledge, really. I didn't come through an IT pathway. I'm not a developer. I haven't come through that way, but I have certainly managed and worked through every tier in the IT space and in business space, in fact. So I could really run a business itself, and I have run businesses myself before, but it's all about the learning. I did additional learning. So I did a master's degree, but I don't know that you need to do a master's degree, but I did it because I wanted to be a better leader. I didn't do a master's degree because I wanted to be a CEO. I actually did it because I wanted to be a better leader, and it enabled me to learn a lot about leadership. It taught me a lot about employees, engagement of employees, and those sorts of things. And that was important to me. So I think when you do additional study, do it for the reasons that resonate for you. Don't just do it because you think it's going to get you the next career move. Do it for the reasons that resonate for you, because then it will actually lead to the better career move, because it will be doing something you really love. Now, I'm not saying go ahead and become a photographer if you want to be a CIO. That's not what I'm talking about. But certainly if you're looking at things such as an MBA, what is your rationale? Why are you doing that? But if you want to learn to be, you want to be working in a more agile environment and you don't really understand that, then go off and do Scrum Master. Do something like that so that you can actually understand what it is that people are talking to you about. Do the things that make sense for you. And there's lots and lots of free training out there that you can just jump onto and read and learn and have a bit of a go at. And I think that those are the things that are important. I also think do things that step you out of your comfort zone. Do public speaking. If you think, oh, my, I can't do that. I don't know how she gets up on stage and does it. Sit on the panel. Do that. I work with a lot of people who say to me, I just want to work with somebody who's really comfortable on stage, and you seem really comfortable on stage. Well, you know, I got to tell you, I started performing when I was in my teens, and I stopped performing when I was in my mid-20s. And when I get up on stage, I'm in my happy, happy place. But for most people, it's that god-awful, I don't want to have to talk in front of people and the microphone feeds back and everything's just a disaster and it's just an awful experience. But for me, I'm coming home when I walk up on a stage. So there's that. I kind of own that, but it's a learned skill. Learning and working with a mentor or a coach, that will really also help you, elevate you. I decided when I moved into the allied health space that I wanted to get to CIO. And I just thought, I'm not getting there my own. My resume wasn't strong enough. My online profile wasn't strong enough. So I engaged an executive coach. And I've been working with her now for the last 4 years. And that has really helped to elevate my brand and what it is that I do. But that was what I felt I needed to do. Now, not everyone needs to do that. But for me, I'd gotten to a point and I knew that I just needed that additional support. And whether it's an executive coach, a mentor, whatever that is for you, sometimes just having somebody that thinks slightly differently and then can offer you things that are slightly different and different approaches just gets you out of that that bubble that you're in or that treadmill that you're on to think slightly differently. Because I certainly think differently. And so when I coach people, mentor them, I really do, think about it from varying points. Being a Lean Six Sigma black belt, as an example, gives me a different view about certain things. Having the change management piece gives me a different view to stakeholder engagement. But having that performance bit in the background is all about how you tell a story and how you get across what you need to get across in a way that people will embrace with energy and excitement and inspiration.
I completely agree with you. I think you're saying something really important there, because there actually has never been someone I've met who's successful, whether that's in their career, whether that's in their life, whether that's they've had a level of success in whatever area that is. These people, they're not different from anyone else, but what they have done is they have invested in themselves. They have grown, they have learned, they have upskilled constantly. And they also know that it's an ongoing process. It's not just something that you go and do one weekend online course or go to one seminar and all of a sudden your life transforms. Growth and development and learning and education, it's something that never ever stops. And this is what I don't think people realize. And everything you've just said there, Mary Beth, like you've had a mentor for 4 years, you've upskilled, you've done change, you've done Six Sigma, you've done Scrum, you've done all of these things, all of these extra, you've done a master's. There's so much you've continued to learn. And that's why you're in the position that you're in today. That's why. And you've also at the same time put yourself out there. You've had the courage to develop your communication style. You've had the courage to develop your brand. It doesn't just happen. And I think that's the key message that I want people to start to understand, is that we have to take responsibility for our own lives. No one's coming to save us. No one's coming to write the script for us. We've got the pen and we've got to be the author of our own stories. And I think you are such a prime, amazing example of that, because, well, I've known you for quite a few years now, from just from recruitment, and I've been in awe and inspired by what you've achieved in such a short amount of time. But I think we could probably both agree that that maybe wouldn't have happened as quickly had you not have invested in yourself, had you not had a mentor, had you not gone and got these skills and equipped yourself the way you have. So I want to just take a moment to say how inspiring it is and how important it is that people hear and listen to this, because you can do this as well. That you can make change and you can have the career that you want and you deserve. And I love the fact that you're now educating and helping others do the same. So that leads me on nicely now to your book that you're writing. And my first thought when I thought, oh my God, she's writing a book, another book. How do you find the time? Like, you know, I was like, good God, this woman is incredible. What made you want to write the book, and what's that process been like for you the second time around?
The first time around, it was a cathartic experience, and I did it because I thought, I wonder if I can do this. I have no idea. I've never written a book, so hey, how hard can it be? 1 year later, hard.
Yeah.
But then I was thinking about my journey, and I was on a webinar, and I was thinking about it, and I thought, I think there are lessons here. I work with individuals and they ask similar questions. And I thought, hang on a minute, I've got these things and I do these things very regularly. And through COVID, I was doing a lot around the sort of the joy scale and stuff like that, where you sit back and work through what has brought you joy, especially with during that beginning piece of COVID, where a lot of people were disenfranchised, they'd lost their jobs because no one knew what was going to happen. And so that was a really tough time. And I did a lot around gratitude practice and those sorts of things. I was on this webinar and I was sitting back and I thought, wow, my journey is interesting. I think it's interesting. And so I started to think about what that journey was and where I'd started and why, and what my why is. And I've been doing a lot of personal development around ikigai, which is something that I really... It's that, you know, Japanese process of just really understanding your why, what is it that drives you, and then getting into a flow. Those things that really drive you and inspire you are the things that bring you joy. And I loved all of that. And I've always worked in that way. And so I decided perhaps there are things that I've learned. Perhaps there's terrible feedback that I've been given or feedback that I've taken on board that just really wasn't right for me. And what happens if somebody else gets that sort of feedback? What do they do with that? And I wanted to start documenting that and giving people an opportunity to read about a journey from one diametrically opposed role or career path into something completely different, and what you actually do to get there. And then the original title was From Singer to CIO. And then I thought about it and I really thought, well, you know what? That really does start limiting the audience that would get the most out of this. And as I was writing it, I remember sitting there thinking about it, just thinking, and I said to my husband, I said, you know, it's like when now means now, you know, it's now. I want to do something. And he said, I think there's the title, When Now Means Now. It's that moment of realization, and you have it many, many times, and certainly you have it in that career space. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to keep writing and just see what happens. And I finished the book, and then I had a dear friend edit the book, and she said, this is really good, you know, I'm learning so much from learning it. And I thought, okay, well, let's launch it and let's do some launches. So I do have some launches coming up in May if you're in Melbourne. And if you're interstate or you can't make the dates, then I will have virtual launches. They'll come out shortly once I've gotten all of the few little things sorted out. But yeah, I felt like all of these things that I say to people when I'm coaching and mentoring, these sort of make a bit of a book, and I should put that together. And so that's what I've done. And I really, really am loving the cover art, and I'm just loving it. It's just really good. And I've been very, the first book, I had a view, and this book, I now know the little mistakes I made in the first book. So I wanted to make sure I didn't do those in the second.
And I think that's amazing. And I find it really inspiring, because you're just going for it. You're just like, you know, I'm going to write a book, and here I am. I'm going to do it. And I think it's just so honorable, and it's so inspiring. And we'll make sure that we put the links to that when this podcast comes out, so people can go and grab a copy. So we'll make sure that we chat to you on that, so they can definitely go and buy the book. But I highly recommend anyone who wants to take charge of their life and their career to go and get that book. But Mary Beth, you really are somebody that has taken control of their career, taken control of their life. And I'd love to know, sort of like my final question is, you know, what is going to be next for you, and what are you sort of like, I guess, you know, obviously you're excited about the book coming out, but anything else that you're working on or you want to work on, like what's your next plan? You know, we obviously talk a lot about having a plan. Do you have one at the moment, or are you just quite happy just taking a pause, getting this book out, and then having a rethink?
Oh, I always have a plan.
I love it.
It's up on my wall right over here. This is the 10-year plan. I've got the plan. I want to get to a point where I can work 3 days a week somewhere I'm passionate about working. I want to continue to do public speaking and emceeing. I'm just lucky enough to be the MC at the Women in Tech Fest, and I really enjoyed that. That was 2 days. It was a lot of work, but it was really interesting women and the attendees. It was just a great event, and I'm doing quite a few public speaking events coming up up until June, and then I'll start looking at the tail end of the year. I want to keep doing that. That really inspires me, and I really love the connection. I love to meet people. I love to connect with people. So for me, it's being able to do work 3 days a week, and then the other 4 days, which will be focused on public speaking and writing. So I want to start my third book. I've got a concept for that, so I want to do that. When I published the first book, I bought 10 ISBNs, which is the code. And I figure, well, you know what? I've paid for them, so I might as well write for them. I think the next book is really focusing on, its working title is A Study in Patience. I'm the most impatient that you could possibly meet, because I'm so delivery delivery oriented, and I execute on a strategy extremely well. And so therefore I'm very, very focused. And when things are out of your control, and what I learned from COVID was so much is out of it. Nothing is controllable, only the way with which we respond to the events that surround us. And I think there's something in that. And I think for me right now, it's about really understanding yourself and what drives you, but how do you temper that? How do you deal with that? And so that's a study in patience. It will change. I'm sure it will change 50 times as I write it, because it'll be another year's adventure of writing. Mm-hmm. But that's the plan for me. I want to continue to work with individuals. I've got my new website coming up, which I want, you know, people want mentoring. I'm doing that, but I really focus my mentoring on transformational career stuff. That's important to me. So it's short, sharp, sweet. We'd work together, and then I help you on a direction, and then you start working towards that, because it takes time. This stuff doesn't happen overnight. So I want to do things that are, you know, bite-sized chunks for individuals, because that means that they can afford that and that they get something from it. They work toward it, but it's not so overwhelming. So that's really what I'm looking at. So I can give you those details later, Georgie, but that's the focal point for me. That's the focus.
Love it. Well, when that third book comes out, we'll have you back on the podcast to discuss that third book and what's next for you then. So I'll look forward to that. But no, Beth, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on today. And when you are on the speaking part, we would love to have you at one of our events, Sisterhood Club Social. So pop that in your diary. We'd love to get you on the panel for one of those coming up. So we'll have a chat offline. But in all honesty, it's been an absolute pleasure. Where can I send people who want to come and find out more about you, your upcoming book and your mentorship?
Send them to LinkedIn at the moment. They can direct message me via LinkedIn. Just connect with me and then direct message me. As the website's being built, I've got my team building that at the moment. I've just done a whole swag of new photos. So, you know, so just getting that up to date. But yeah, come to that. On LinkedIn, it does show all the events that I'm going to be speaking at. I do have events coming up. I'm keynoting at a cloud summit on the 4th of May. So that's coming up. I'm also doing a summit in Sydney. So I will be in Sydney on the 17th of May. Book launches on the 18th of May, the 25th of May. So if people are interested in coming along to those, they can also direct message me on LinkedIn. And then I'm doing a lot of talking around the book at the moment. And the byline really is, and I'll say this now to everyone listening, don't be afraid to pivot. Be afraid not to. That's really the key. Because stagnation, getting comfortable, it's okay for a while. Then it just is not fulfilling anymore. And I want everyone that listens to this, that reads my books, that I just want everyone to have the most amazing career, because you're going to do it for the next 40 years, right? So you want it to be really amazing. You want to sit back and reflect and go, wow, what a ride. That was a great ride. Yeah. And in amongst everything else, if you're having a really joyous, wonderful career, it just makes everything else possible.
I completely agree. And on that note, Mary Beth, amazing to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much. And I really hope everyone who is listening to this has got some incredible value. Please go and follow Mary Beth, reach out to her on LinkedIn, and I will speak to you again soon. Thanks so much. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoy these episodes, the number one thing you can do to help us grow and keep spreading our mission and message is to hit the subscribe button. And if you have time, give us a quick rating. Appreciate each and every one of you who tune in every week. And we look forward to bringing you many more episodes this year. Take care.